Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network, where we review The Clone Wars television series. Tonight we're going to be discussing Season 5, Episode 13, Point of No Return. I'm Jonathan, and joining me as they have in this arc is my own D-Squad, Nathan.
Hello everyone, glad it's ending.
Jerry.
Hey guys, this is Jerry. Glad to be here for the finale of this arc.
And Jen.
Hey guys, does this mean we're assigned to the same battalion and we'll be seeing each other all the time now?
I certainly hope so.
I'm Corporal. If anything happens to Jonathan, I can lead.
This is, as we've said, the final episode of the D-Squad arc, ending, for now at least, our relationships with the droids and the frog. Now, what did each of you think about how this kind of put a cap on it? We'll start with Jerry.
All right. I got to say, I really enjoyed this episode. I think in a lot of ways, this is what I wanted the first episode in the arc to kind of be more like. At the very least, you know, perhaps the first episode could have led into something more like this for the second episode, and then you didn't need the second episode at all. And quite frankly, this is a little bit retrospective now, but the third episode with the Republic Commando was sort of like a good episode that walked into the wrong arc. Like, they could have taken that little amnesia plot or Republic Commando plot and done anything with it that had nothing to do with these guys. But so it was pretty cool. I think it had great action. The droids were far more involved in the show than I think they'd been certainly in the previous two. And I think the fact that they were going up against a separatist plot that was, you know, a little simple, but at the same time, it was kind of a big deal what they're trying to do. I mean, it was mass destruction that they had the opportunity to foil. So overall, I think the show was pretty fulfilling. So at least to me, it ended on a pretty good note.
Okay, Jen, why don't you give us your thoughts?
After the last two episodes, this one was a big difference. I enjoy this one a lot more. It was a good episode. It was interesting enough. I liked getting to see the droids doing some stuff. They kind of explained things enough that I wasn't constantly thrown out of my suspension of disbelief like I was in the last two episodes. And it was a nice little finish to the arc. I like getting to see Anakin. I liked seeing a little bit of characterization there with him. We'll probably talk about that later. And I thought it was pretty good.
And Nathan, what did you think?
I actually really liked this episode. Of course, I really liked last week's episode. It's an arc that has some solid episodes, this one and the last one especially, and yet it will always be dragged down by that second chapter that was about nothing and went nowhere.
All right, and I also really enjoyed this episode. I actually found that it really kind of interested me in a lot of different ways. I liked seeing the characterization of the droids this time. I think, as we'll discuss later, there was some interesting developments with resolution to some of their interactions. And at the end, though, I do have to admit that I felt it was kind of rushed, and I kind of rewatched all four episodes together. Yes, I sat through A Sunny Day in the Void once again, just for this show and just for you guys. But if they had kind of removed that and stretched out maybe the Republic Commando plot and stretched this out, especially at the end, I think this would have been we would have left this saying that this was one of the better arcs. The episode begins with D-Squad approaching the Jedi Cruiser in their shuttle, and Gascon is very pleased with himself that he's accomplished his mission and is kind of back to his kind of blustery self, telling R2 to contact the ship and tell the captain he'll be expecting to have dinner with him. It kind of almost like a backslide. What did you guys think?
I agree with you. It's one of those, he's one of those characters that is, you know, quick to be humbled, but then once he thinks he can kind of get away with the, hey, look, see, everything worked out just like I planned it. I mean, you know, he tries to really kind of get away with that. I think it's just because at the end of the day, he's still with droids, and I'm sure he's feeling, it's like, well, what, are the droids going to, like, rat me out? Anybody going to listen to a droid? No, I can kind of tell the big fish story however I want. And you even see him kind of revert back to that once he's in danger. He even goes from the, well, my mission was to do this, and this isn't my mission, and I can't be worried about that. The explosives, let's just get in our shuttle and get out of here. And even when he first kind of heard how many people, thousands of people could be killed, he's like, oh, it doesn't matter. He eventually comes around. I think sacrifice of BZ shakes him around on that a little bit, but he started off kind of regressing a little bit.
Felt to me like it was like he's a pessimist most of the time. Not in sort of the traditional sense that it's shown usually on television where, you know, they just constantly are saying, you know, we're doomed, we're doomed, we're doomed, so much as he's looking at the downside most of the time. Like, he's expecting that this mission is so dangerous it could fail. He could die. The droids could be destroyed. But hey, at least it's not a life form, so it's a little bit okay, et cetera, et cetera. So we get this sort of ebb and flow to his character where when things are going well, he's willing to cut them some slack, even consider them, you know, to be soldiers who deserve respect. But the more he's, you know, impressed with stress in the situation, the more he reverts back to the same kind of, you know, oh, we're all doomed. This isn't going to work. You know, I can't believe I'm here with just droids kind of stuff. You're all just mechs. I think that's what we get when he's on the cruiser. It did seem like it kind of went a very quick spin around between him being, you know, the triumphant hero returning, because he really did finish his mission. It wasn't quite the way expected and, you know, how they finally got back, but they did accomplish the mission, to eventually being, oh crap, you know, this isn't my mission. We're all going to die if we try this, so we're getting out of here. You can sort of see the fear in the character there, as opposed to it just being, well, this isn't my job. You know, I'm being stubborn. It seems like there's some fear there. But then when it comes down to, you know what, I have to overcome that fear and do this job now that BZ is gone, et cetera, et cetera. It seemed as though he's finally getting past that. I'd like to think that that is a form of character growth that they meant to have happen throughout the arc, but it's played in such a subtle way sometimes that you find yourself scratching your head. And other times it's so over the top that you figure that's all there is to the character, like the, oh, I'm going to die, and, you know, thinking about suicide stuff. Interesting character arc, but not handled well enough, I don't think.
Very inconsistent as well. I mean, if you look at it throughout the entire arc, it doesn't make a lot of sense that somebody would vacillate that wildly and that completely back and forth. Maybe it's just something about that species. Who knows? So when they get to the cruiser and they start their landing process, Wack is already saying that something doesn't feel right, something's wrong. And, well, okay, I guess maybe pit droids have intuition. But the one thing that I noticed here wasn't the story, was the visuals. When they're landing and they show that sort of, from the pilot's point of view, of moving into that cruiser, I don't know what about it, but that looked really cool to me. And I think throughout this episode, there were some really good visuals that, while I'd noticed previous episodes, even in this arc, that the visuals were good, this one just seemed especially good to me. Did any of you pick up on that?
There were definitely some really good visuals in this episode compared to the others. Just even like the explosion at the end, some of the shots in the ship, like, they just looked really cool. They got a really good feeling of depth in some of those wide shots where they're walking in the empty, I guess, like, ship hatches and where they stored vessels and things like that. Yeah, they did a really good job of just conveying big, empty, open space with just very simple visuals, and they did a really good job with that.
Well, I think there's two particular things in this episode that really stands out visually. One was the hologram of the phony officers or whatever on the deck when the droids and Gascon entered in. I mean, that them passing through those holograms was really cool. And the explosion at the end was just of the Jedi Cruiser was just phenomenal. So yeah, the visuals were just A+ all the way through.
I would add to that the whole the space station that they go to over what is apparently now called Carida instead of Carida, as it showed up in so many audiobooks, that planet that we see among other places in Jedi Academy trilogy and such. I mean, that space station, granted it was designed after sort of a pre-existing concept from Star Tours, but its design, its detail was really nicely done. It seems like they were able to use enough elements from things that they had before, you know, the interior of the ship and the battle droids, you know, the super tactical droid and all that, that they were able to spend their time and their resources a little bit more on some of the stuff that we usually would think of as, you know, sort of their second priority outside of characters. So many characters came back that, hey, they had the time and resources to really make some stunning elements of the environment and the effects this time.
So the group departs their ship and are starting to maybe question why there's nobody there and no one's there to greet them. And Wack kind of calls it out. They make their way up to the bridge and they, as Jerry said, encounter these holograms. And I'm wondering, why holograms? What's the purpose of that? I mean, if it's to fool people, I wouldn't think that anybody would be getting that close. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that sort of crossed my mind, too. I mean, I'm assuming that if a Jedi cruiser or a cruiser's coming, maybe it's routine to do a scan of life forms, crew, and whatever, but the holograms aren't going to help in that, so not really sure. They seem like it near the end when that cruiser's coming in awfully fast that they were expecting, oh, there's another straggler, and seemed like they were expecting another ship to come in, not sure why, but yeah, I guess that was maybe just as a little bit of a fool us, fool anyone who might come on board, but why would they be expecting anybody? I don't know. It was kind of, I'll give the show that just because it was sort of nifty how they used it, but you're right, Jonathan. It served a practical purpose.
No, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to give it to them, but it was one of those things. It's just sort of like, I wonder why. And then the ship jumps to hyperspace, which again is, I think the visuals just looked amazing in this episode. And then the droids are discovered. Why weren't they discovered sooner? After they're discovered on the bridge, then the ship seems to be full of battle droids, but at that point they hadn't run into any of them.
I would say that goes along with the whole hologram thing. Now, I would figure the holograms are probably there so that if they are contacted, you know, if they're contacted through a comm link type of thing or a visual link, then it would look as though they are there. Although you could make the argument of, you know, why couldn't they just hack into the computer system and fake a video of a character? But we haven't seen that much. I mean, we've seen, you know, oh, I need to fake a droid, so I'm holding up the droid. I need to fake a trooper, so I've got a battle droid wearing a trooper helmet all the way back in season one kind of stuff. So maybe it had to do with, you know, long-range communication type stuff. But you would figure that if they've just been boarded and they don't know who or what the boarding party might be, then they would try to hide all of them. I mean, once they do get to the bridge, you've got all of your holograms, but the other battle droids are all kind of down underneath and then come out once they realize who these boarders are. I mean, maybe it's just a matter of there's not an easy way to necessarily check for them to make sure that they are the only boarders until they've got actual visual sightings of them in person, so to speak.
But they knew that they were coming, and they let them on board. The bay doors were open, and once the shuttle landed, the bay doors closed. They knew that they were coming up, and originally that shuttle was filled with more of the ore. So it shouldn't have been a surprise, and I would think, again, in retrospect, that maybe there would have been somebody there to unload the shuttle. And now that I'm thinking about it, was the shuttle unloaded later in the episode? Meaning that when they landed, there was ore in the shuttle, but when they left later, the shuttle had been unloaded by somebody.
You would figure that it would have been if they really were expecting it. I don't remember if we saw that actually like in the back of the compartment or anything like that. I do remember, you know, on the way up there, Wack talking about how they're not getting any response from the ship. If that's the case, it may just be that there was a communications blackout. So granted, they knew the shuttle itself was coming, but maybe, you know, him saying, you know, Meeber Gascon here, I'm coming back triumphant and all that stuff. Maybe that was not a transmission that got through to the vessel. So they knew a ship was coming, but didn't necessarily know that it had Republic forces instead of battle droids on board. That way they would have let it in, but then still have that question of, well, who is this boarding party? Wait a second, there's intruders on board. They're not doing what they should be doing, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if they expected battle droids coming in with the landing, would they necessarily have been scanning to see who got off of that shuttle or just let the droids go about their routine business? It all kind of lends to that whole idea that they were overconfident. You know, your overconfidence is your weakness. Well, this time the droids were overconfident and it allowed them to get all the way to the bridge.
Remember, if they were scanning for life forms, they were the only life form there would have been Gascon, and he's small enough. Well, he could have been a rodent that snuck on board the ship while it was down on the ground. So, you know, that could have explained that. But in any case, they make it up to the bridge and the droids discover them and they hightail it out of there and make it down to the control room where, well, actually, right before they make it down to the control room, we have a little Three Stooges antics with some battle droids and a bomb. How did this feel to you guys?
Hey, lift with the legs now, guys. Because you wouldn't want to pull your back when you're a battle droid.
That made me groan a little bit. The battle droids always make me groan, but it's meant to be some slapstick comedy to get a cheap laugh, and I'll give it to him since there was only really one. But God, that was so doofy.
At least that detonator ended up, you know, basically destroying the droid. Now that was funny.
I thought it was interesting how R2 and the other droids kind of overpowered the battle droids in the control room, and then Wack uses the corpse of one of the battle droids to kind of throw off the other ones. I did think that was kind of cute. Again, we'd seen similar things before, but to see one droid using another droid like that, it got a laugh out of me.
Yeah, I kind of like that. It was a little weekend at Bernie's for me, but that was fun.
And then they discover that what the item is, they don't know it's a detonator right away, but they figure it out. And Wack makes an interesting comment. He says that this isn't Republic technology unless the Republic has downgraded its quality or something to that effect, or lowered its standards. And I don't know why, maybe it's from EU, and Nathan, you can kind of help me with this, but I always assumed or got the impression that the Separatists actually had maybe the edge technologically, because they have the Techno Union and the Geonosians. You know, that's what they do. They build these things. So I found it interesting that the Republic may be looking down on the quality of the Separatist materiel. Nathan, what did you get out of that?
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit of an odd comment. I mean, granted, there's sort of an arms race going on during the Clone Wars anyway. You know, who's going to have the fastest starfighters? You know, which droids are going to be able to beat which clones and that sort of thing. So you can see both of them sort of looking down on each other, especially if we're talking about droids that are programmed with a certain level of patriotism for their side. What got me was this isn't Republic technology. Really? You don't think that big Separatist symbol on every side of it didn't possibly give it away that it's not Republic tech?
Maybe when he was talking about the technology, he was referring to the method in which the symbols were printed onto the detonator. You know, oh no, we don't use that kind of print technology anymore.
Well, I thought it was interesting that they put it on every side. Like, we just want to make sure you absolutely know who's blowing you up.
Yeah, just in case anybody does get on board and they aren't detected by the droids and they run into this and they're not sure what it is, they think it might be part of a Republic mission, let's make sure it screams Separatist so you know that it's something that's not supposed to be there. Very covert.
Well, speaking of covert, after Gascon kind of announces that, you know, this is not what he signed on for and he's getting the heck out of there, and they don't know that this ship is going to be used to destroy thousands of Republic lives, the super tactical droid uses something that I do not believe we've seen in the Clone Wars before, a buzz droid. And he doesn't use it for destruction, he uses it for espionage. Now, I thought this was a really cool use of the buzz droids. And I have to admit, I'm throwing myself under the bus here a little bit. But when I was watching it the first time, my boys were watching it with me. And I'm like, well, what is that he's holding? I don't really get it. And Jonah looks at me and goes, Dad, that's a buzz droid. How do you not know that? He took me to school.
Nice. I like the fact that we don't get the most obvious possible continuity issue with the buzz droid that we might have had, which is how, you know, in Revenge of the Sith, R2-D2 has to be told to shoot it in the eye in order to shut it off. So I was expecting him to shoot one in the eye and sure enough have us go, oh, wait, why didn't he know that in Revenge of the Sith? And it seems like they purposely made sure that of all the fighting methods he used, he, I don't think, ever uses that one. So it really was kind of cheering to me to be able to say, look, he's not only doing all these awesome things against these buzz droids, and we're finally getting to see them in the show, swarming, in fact, but they didn't trip over the continuity on it when they introduced it, which is what I was expecting them to do.
You know, Nathan, it's funny. I was actually thinking the complete opposite, because I always took from that scene in Revenge of the Sith that R2 already knew that. Shoot in the center eye. Well, of course I'm going to shoot in the center eye, because that's like what he instantly does. So I actually thought about it in the opposite way, like, hey, Obi-Wan, I've done this before. I fought like 5,000 of them. Okay, I got this. But yeah, that's, of course, when one became, it was like the equivalent of Tribbles or something for Star Wars all of a sudden, with these things are just coming out of everywhere. And of course, they have to take a much different way of taking them out.
Now, we're jumping over one very important detail for this episode. When the droids and Gascon are leaving the control room, R2 discovers BNI-393, or Bunny. He captures her, and she reveals that there are some members of the Republic crew left, and they turn out to be a mouse droid, a Treadwell, and two Gonks.
Talk about low standards of technology. Were you expecting, like, hey, there's crew members? Were you expecting clones? I kind of was. Like, maybe there's one or two clones, humans, whatever, that maybe would actually be there to help them out. Kind of goes against the theme of the arc, but it would have played in a little bit to last week.
I was certain she was going to be evil. I don't think, maybe my memory is just bad, but I always thought those bunny looking droids were on the Separatist side. And so seeing it talking about being on the Republic side, that really confused me. And I was like, oh, she's a double agent. And so I was actually really thrown when she was legit.
You know, Jen, you're right. Every time we've seen that type of droid, it has been with the Separatists. It was, I believe, General Worrell's droid in the Clone Wars movie. And then in the Blue Shadow Virus duology, I believe the Mad Scientist droid, the one who set things off, was one of those same types. So, yeah, when I saw Bunny, I assumed she was a Separatist droid as well. But I kind of liked how these droids were characterized. They all look, as much as droids can, look pretty timid. And when they start chasing the Buzz droid into the trap, one thing that kind of made me laugh, and probably made most people laugh, it was when the Treadwell couldn't get through the door. And I think that's something that I've always kind of wondered with Star Wars, is these doors that have these lips, how are some of these Tread droids going to get through them? So I found that amusing.
That poor Treadwell droid just didn't have a clue. I mean, when they were walking through that one corridor trying to avoid all the shots, I thought he'd be actually one of the hardest ones to hit, but nope. Pow, pow, pow. I was, you know, being so tall and skinny, I thought he'd be the hardest target, but nah, he's good.
And of all droids, why would that Treadwell have been on the ship in the first place if he was meant to go around the ship? Presumably he must have been, you know, supposed to be in a docking bay or something like that, because if the ship has doors like that everywhere, you would imagine somebody having to stay with the droid at all times to pick it up by its big old long stick and move it over the lip every time it got to one. Pretty inconvenient droid to have on a ship like that.
Advanced technology, yeah.
But other droids would have had that issue too. I mean, sure, maybe R2 units can kind of lift themselves over that, but MSE mouse droids that fly all over the place and ships like that, there's no way they could get through those pressure doors, is there?
I wouldn't think so, unless they got like a four-wheel drive thing up in there.
Unless there actually is a little mouse inside driving it, like we've seen in Robot Chicken, who can, you know, somehow pick it up.
Maybe there's a little, like, ramp that comes up a few feet ahead, and the mouse droid just really picks up a good head of speed and just shoots through the center of the door.
Little spring-loaded thing on the bottom that just goes boing.
What an awesome visual it was in that gunnery bay when they're searching for what they think is one Buzz droid and just find dozens. I thought that was just so cool and so creepy, and it really felt like, you know, they were in genuine danger. And it turns out for some of them, they were.
It was kind of like a little bit of a horror movie, wasn't it?
What's droid for game over, man? Game over!
No, I thought they did a really good job with this. Like, this is one of the times in the show where I felt like somebody was in genuine jeopardy. And it turns out somebody was. So I was actually really surprised that they, after all that, they had the guts to go through and kill BZ.
Especially after all the times that BZ almost got nailed and still came through. You know, you're kind of starting to think that BZ is, you know, the droid that won't die and then sacrifices itself, himself, for everyone else. I was kind of shocked. I mean, I figured maybe a C4, you know, the one that really, you know, it's not the pink one, so you're not going to be offending any of the 501st guys if you do anything to that one. Can't be R2. BZ is the one that we've seen come through so much, so surely it'll be C4 if something happens. And no, it's BZ, the one that he had the closest personal connection to, other than maybe Whack.
BZ's probably thinking, you know what? I've been electrocuted. I've been shot at. I've been almost blown up. You know what? I'm done. Fine. Whatever.
On my own terms! On my own terms!
What did you hear when he flew out? You heard him say, I regret nothing.
Nice. What I was actually almost pleased to see is that they did, you know, that it did cost D-Squad something, that it wasn't just everybody was going to make it out fine. At that point, I kind of almost respected the episode and maybe the arc for these characters a little bit more, because, you know, we had thought in the first episode that BZ was dead, but then he comes back. And at that point, I was wondering, oh, man, they're not, you know, they're going to be sensitive to the kids. They're not going to destroy any of these droids. And when they did this, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. I mean, well, as horrible as it sounds, it feels right. The other thing that was kind of nice is seeing Gascon's almost like feeling for losing this droid, which we haven't really seen that connection to them up to this point. But the character was very obviously upset. He was trying to shout to BZ to magnetize and lock down. And when he doesn't, you know, he almost like calls out after him. And I don't know, that almost made me like Gascon a little bit. What about you guys?
Well, I guess I don't know how to think about it specifically with Gascon, because, you know, he even needed R2, after they closed the airlock back. It required R2, through WAC, who translated, to say, hey, maybe it'd be appropriate if you said some words. He's like, well, okay, yeah, I guess I can. I guess that would be appropriate. So I don't know. I guess I didn't see that connection. I didn't interpret Gascon's comment of magnetize any more than just something practical that, hey, he's my ride. He's literally my command center. I don't know. I mean, it almost seemed to me like I kind of expected the orange R5 droid to be the one to do that and get lost that way, because he's the one that can never remember to set himself up when he used his laser weapon. So I don't know. It to me wasn't a moment for Gascon at all. I overlooked it.
Kind of struck me that of all the characters in there, of the heroes, if all the droids could magnetize, the one that's in danger really is Gascon. So maybe it's one of those times where he sort of looked death in the eye, and that's part of why, you know, when BZ sacrifices himself to save everyone, that he's feeling more appreciative, perhaps, than the first time we thought we saw BZ die, and all these other instances in which the droids have been put in danger, because this time it was his butt that was on the line, and of the entire team, it was really him that faced the worst possibilities, either not having air or being blown out the airlock.
And the idea of him, like, doing this little eulogy thing for BZ, it struck me as like him still trying to play the colonel, like he was still trying to kind of jam himself into this role that he's just completely unsuited for. And it struck me as him kind of aping what he thought was supposed to be correct. And it didn't come off sincere to me at all. I know it was supposed to, but like, I don't know. It felt like he was phoning it in because he felt like he was supposed to.
Jen, we know that you're still blaming him for the death or supposed death of Gregor, and you can't let it go. It's all right.
I'm bitter.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned the voice actor, because this is Stephen Stanton. I mean, this is Tarkin. That's how they were able to easily get Tarkin into this episode, now that he's gone from captain to admiral and whatnot. So it's interesting that in different roles, the way a character comes across from the same voice actor could wind up completely falling flat in some cases and coming off well in others. I think we've seen that not many times in the series, but every great once in a while we'll run into that bizarre dichotomy there.
So at this point, Gascon decides that they need to do something, that no more Republic lives can be lost, and he's going to stop this ship. And they come up with a plan that R2 is going to go set the detonator to go off early. At the same time, the super tactical droid interprets the buzz droid's lack of reporting in as that they have failed. Again, probably one of the smarter droids we've seen. And goes to prepare the detonator himself so that they can complete their mission. This is where things start to kind of pick up. And this is also where I feel that this episode just really kind of shoots into high gear and almost rushes from this point to the end, but still very satisfying. What did you guys think about their plan of setting off the detonator early?
Felt kind of duh to me. Like, why, you know, why was this not considered earlier in the episode? I mean, either get it off the ship, or if you want to stop it because you may not be able to turn the ship, then blow the thing up. You've got a shuttle. Get out of there. I mean, I'm kind of surprised it took them that long to come up with that as their plan of action. And if it was that easy, in theory, why all the theatrics about how this isn't my mission, my mission is done, and all that stuff? Why not just do it at the beginning, get the heck out of there? Congratulations, you're now a hero twice.
I wondered why they didn't just get that detonator and push it out an airlock. That was something we didn't talk about. Nothing had been ever said, but I always assumed that you couldn't open an airlock while in hyperspace, that it was a different kind of space. You wouldn't be sucked out the same way, that it was. It kind of goes back to A Sunny Day in the Void, where we really kind of questioned what was hyperspace. Being that they establish you can open a airlock door, why not just toss it out the airlock and then the ship can't be exploded?
Well, they were already using their mouse droids to ferry around the gonk droids, and if you tried to push it, it would get caught on the lip of one of those doors.
Ah.
I kind of wondered why a detonator was required in the first place. I would just assume if you crashed a ship into a space station, a floating space fortress like that, the ship would explode and thus detonate everything. I don't know why it was even necessary. It's like, okay, plan A, ram the ship, step two. Oh, hey, there's no step two. It just takes care of itself.
Yeah, especially when they made such a point of how volatile the ore was in the last episode and this episode, where the droids are like, don't even shoot near it. You might set it off.
And why not waste a bunch of the battle droids? They're like, okay, let's evacuate. Why? Just stand all your battle droids there and tell them to shoot at it when they're inches away from it. Who cares if you waste a dozen worthless battle droids anyway who don't even have strong backs to lift things?
How were they going to evacuate anyway? And now I'm kind of wondering that myself. How were they going to get off that ship?
Well, wouldn't you figure that, you know, that shuttle was coming back bringing more? I figured that they would, at least most of them, at least the super tactical droid, get onto the shuttle that should have been bringing that last load and get the heck out of there on that. I mean, you would figure the detonator might be some kind of sort of a failsafe, you know, if it's heading towards the station and the station is able to nail it with a tractor beam or something and divert it so it's not gonna crash. It'll still explode and still wind up with that debris damage like we saw in the episode when it exploded early, and still be able to have some damage happen to Valor Station. I mean, it just, I wasn't taken aback by the fact that they would need to have a detonator. It seemed like it would be a solid backup plan just in case the ramming itself didn't work, or, you know, enough bulkheads and stuff close upon the initial impact that it doesn't quite cause the explosions they expect. The explosions are contained somewhat, et cetera, et cetera. It seemed to make sense to me.
Is there an EU example of where anyone's tractor beamed something of that size, though? I mean, I would think, even when Anakin realized, hey, that thing's coming in awfully fast, what were they going to do about it?
Well, you know, when the real world already has plans for using massive amounts of white paintballs to deflect an asteroid coming at Earth, I would believe just about anything is possible. I do think they've used it for deflection before, but I can't recall a specific example. But you would think that that sort of thing, I mean, even if it's just, I'm going to tractor beam it and not let it come closer. You know, as long as there's something to deviate them so that the crash may not happen, that detonator would possibly be necessary.
Actually, they used something similar back in, I believe it was season 2, the Brain Worms episode, where it was a smaller ship, but that medical ship was coming toward the station, and they use a tug and a tractor beam to sort of stop it and force it to dock rather than crash into the medical station. Do any of you remember that?
Vaguely. That's a good recall.
Yes, I watched these too much. We then flash to the station where Anakin and Obi-Wan are attending a military strategy conference. And Anakin says that's the one thing he hates about this job is these conferences. How many conferences have they had? I mean, the war is only really about 3 years long.
Oh, I'm sure they have, you know, status calls every week and, you know, quarterly updates. I'm sure it happens more often than you'd think.
It's a subtle jab at the celebrations and stuff. Pulling a Shatner on Saturday night.
I think anybody who's been to a faculty meeting or a staff meeting or any kind of meeting, like, one's enough. I think once you've been through one, you're just like, nope, we're done.
Amen.
Yeah, let me know when I can go back to doing my job and, like, saving the galaxy and stuff.
Speaking as someone who has to go to a building meeting tomorrow, I can appreciate that.
You can almost argue, though, also that, I mean, Anakin's probably going to be a little bit on edge because R2-D2 is out there, and he has that very personal connection to that droid. So I can see him being even more antsy than normal being there at a meeting this time around. I mean, we see the immediate reaction that he has when, you know, it's believed that R2-D2 was lost. I mean, he doesn't waste any time. The emotions flare. You know, certainly he's got to be antsy with R2-D2 on a mission and unaccounted for at that point.
And we get to see, as we noted before, the return of Tarkin, who is now an admiral. And this is one of those things that I found kind of nice, because it's logical they would have somebody that we already knew in a role like that. They already have the character model. As Nathan said, they already had the voice actor. I think it was just something nice instead of just creating somebody new. What were you guys happy to see him back?
I thought it was a great nod. I mean, it totally makes sense if that is such a huge event for the Republic forces to have that strategy meeting. All the Jedi are there, the Council's there. Yeah, why wouldn't an admiral like Tarkin now be right in the thick of it?
I love the fact that we get to see Tarkin show up in this. I was kind of hoping that he would come back eventually. Though it was funny, on my second viewing of it, after looking through the slideshow on StarWars.com, where they've got the whole thing about how the table in the command center is made to look like the one from Yavin at the Rebel base, I couldn't help but say to the screen, my computer screen, you know, how's it feel like to be on the other side of the table now? B-word for Tarkin, because here he is now. You know, he's the one having to stare down at it as doom is possibly looming towards them.
Maybe this is what gave him the idea.
Now, Nathan, does this change Tarkin's backstory at all? Because I know originally, well, actually, there's probably, I think, several backstories on him, probably conflicting backstories, because I was always understand that his rise to power was more political than military.
It's both. I mean, they kind of interweave bits and pieces where sometimes he's in the military, sometimes he's out, sometimes he's doing military and civilian type political things. I honestly think that it's probably going to take Dan Wallace's upcoming new, whatever they're going to call it, it's called the essential characters, not the essential guide to characters anymore. But I like to think that that's probably going to be one of those sources to take all these bits and pieces and sort of fit them all together. They did it a little bit. I mean, I'll give Jason Fry and Paul Urquhart credit. They did it a little bit in the Essential Guide to Warfare, but I'm waiting for something definitive to sort it out. It seems like it could fit, but I mean, at this point, it's a bunch of puzzle pieces we've sort of vaguely laid out in order without actually trying to see if they truly snap together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we'll have to see how it plays out. Maybe they'll tell us there's actually two of them. So R2 goes and sets off the detonator, or plans to, as he's fighting with the super tactical droid, while the rest of the crew gets on the shuttle. And Gascon wants to wait, and Wack kind of takes the choice away from him and says, "We're leaving." They get off the ship, and R2 sets off the detonator, which destroys the ship. And as I said, I watched this with my boys, and they got upset. They were like, "No, R2 can't die. What are they doing?" What was your reaction?
I thought it was funny. I was laughing at that shot. That was one of the few times that like Wack got a genuine laugh out of me. Because I mean, maybe I'm more cynical, but like, there's no way they're going to kill R2. So like, I wasn't really terribly concerned for his safety, but I could definitely see how maybe a younger viewer would be kind of upset by that.
I was thinking that, of course, let's have the character who's got to survive be the one staying behind. So I wasn't like Jen, I wasn't really worried about him. But to see the way that it winds up playing out with the damage and such to him, I thought it was a brilliant way for them to go back and sort of retcon in the whole, yeah, those enhanced boosters we gave him a few episodes ago? This is why they're gone at this point. I like the fact that they gave us an in-story reason why that type of thing would not have to be explained away otherwise, because it already has been.
Jerry?
It's one of those things that the only real reaction is, oh, okay, so R2 kind of gets blown up, but they'll find enough of them to put them back together. I mean, that was my immediate reaction. Even before Anakin was like, I want a search party out there immediately. Okay, we'll go look for your droid, even though there are probably hundreds of people who are injured and need medical attention. We'll find your robot. But no, I was just thinking, oh, okay, they'll find the scraps and piece them together. It was so obvious, right? I mean, how do you possibly create any tension out of that moment? Earlier in the story, I actually half thought Gascon and the droids would have just resolved themselves to, hey, I'm really the only one dying, but let's just blow this thing up now. I half thought they might have went there. Of course, that would have been a little bit more decisive even for R2, but still, there's no reaction. It's like, oh, okay, they'll piece them together. I guess a droid can survive something like that, and you can just reassemble the parts.
I, as you, knew that obviously R2 wasn't going to be destroyed, but I know in the expanded universe, they've already established that droids can upload their memory cores to other sources and, be sort of reincarnated in another droid body. And that's kind of how I thought that they were going to do it. Find a way, a la Search for Spock, kind of transfer his essence into another droid body. Because I did not think that there was any possible way that he could have survived being that close to the explosion. I mean, they would have found parts, but there would have been far more of them, tiny little bits being that close to such a major explosion.
Now, I guess where the surprise did come is that I was expecting him to somehow set off the detonator and escape. He's still kind of flying around there, fighting the dude, setting it off. No, it's going to be too soon. I'm like, all right, great. R2 did it. How's he going to get out? Oh, crap. He's not getting out. Okay, I guess they're just going to assemble the pieces. So I was sitting there waiting for, we know R2 survives. He's obviously in all the movies. How's he getting out? Okay, wait for it. It blew up.
I would say that probably the way he gets out, I mean, I was not, it didn't strike me as unbelievable that he could be that close to the explosion and survive, because obviously pieces of the ship remain. And he was by the detonator, which as it goes off, maybe sends him out into space or whatever. Maybe that's what does the damage to him. And then the force of that impact sends it sort of moving away and whatnot, because the detonator wasn't necessarily tied, from what I could tell, wasn't tied into the radonium. It was just going to start an explosion on the ship, and the chain reactions of explosions on the ship would cause the radonium to explode. So it wasn't like he was sitting there right next to the radonium itself when it exploded, at least not from what I could tell, unless there's tons of radonium packed into the detonator itself. I'm not sure that was ever made clear, but I'm with Jerry. I was very shocked that we didn't just see him, you know, big explosion, and then R2-D2 with his little boosters just zipping away, like, off, you know, toward the station, and nothing else.
Now, what I thought was going to be funny and half expected to happen, since it blew up and we didn't see exactly what happened to R2, when Anakin says, "I wish R2 was here right now," or "Where's R2 when I need him?" I was expecting him to fly up against the window, you know, the explosion, or just like he got out from the top of, you know, that little canopy or area they're at, and just like take off and like crash smack right into the windshield of where Anakin was at. Oh, hey, there you are.
One thing that I did really like about the explosion, I mean, besides the incredible visuals there, was a lot of the little details. And when the pieces of wreckage, you know, started to batter the station, did any of you notice that there was damage kind of showing up? Some of the windows were starting to crack, as we've seen, and there was like visual damage, which is, again, another bit of attention to detail that the producers of this show have really, really gotten good about.
I love this explosion. I thought they did a really good job with the whole thing. I think this is the first time we've ever seen an explosion with actual like shrapnel and residue. And usually it's just a big fireball and everyone's like, yay, something exploded. And there's no, you know, consequences at all. This was like, okay, you stopped it in time, but there's stuff flying everywhere. Big pieces of this enormous cruiser. And it was really cool. I love that idea that, you know, they stopped it, but it's an explosion in a relatively, I guess you could call it a confined area of space, but it's populated and it's going to start bouncing off things. And I really loved it. And the fact that it was multicolored, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but my little science nerd cup floweth over for a minute, because different things burn in different colors when you get like different metals or different compounds. So the idea that it's a multicolored explosion made me really happy.
So as we said, they find R2-D2, they bring him back, and the quickest rebuild in droid history, they put him back together. And D-Squad and Anakin all say, "Oh, it's great to have you back, R2, you know, really good." Whack and Gascon realize that they'll be spending the rest of the war together, and poof, the episode is over. This felt extremely rushed to me. I knew that they kind of had to wrap it up, but wow, I mean, the time crunch really, I really, really, really felt the time crunch here.
Was it any more rushed, though, really, than the end of A New Hope? I mean, we've got, I guess now the official word is that I think there's a lapse of going from an evening to a morning or something. I forget. I'd have to look at the holocron stuff again from the Atlas. But, I mean, we had a very fast turnaround between, you know, R2 coming back from the Battle of Yavin all blasted to crap and being just fine for the awards ceremony the next day. And, I mean, once that battle ends, it's basically, here's a quick awards ceremony and Iris out. It kind of felt like a typical Star Wars ending to me, if nothing else, an ending that was closer to A New Hope than a lot of these episodes have done as far as emulating the feel of a film ending.
I'm not talking about the feel of a film ending. I'm just talking about how quick they had to wrap everything up in the time of the episode. I think from the time they find R2 to the time the episode ends is under a minute. And the other thing that they left unresolved was the decryption chip. Now, the only thing that I could come up with is I assume that the thing that they were trying to decrypt was the fact that they were going to use a Jedi cruiser to blow up this conference. And so it kind of made the whole original mission moot. But that was just kind of left hanging. This was the whole driving force for the last three episodes. And poof, we all forgot about it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one thing I wanted to make sure we hit on today, was that the whole reason they started the mission is so worthless from a story perspective. Yeah, you can imagine, or they could come up with a comic or something that explains what they ended up doing with it. But if it's not in the show, since it started in the show, who cares? Which goes back to one of my earlier points. And Jonathan, I liked what you said with, you know, maybe they could have brought the encryption key back, learned about this, then go met with the that Republic commando to go aid them in a mission. And, hey, we're going to use you droids, and Gascon, you're so effective. You guys go up here and infiltrate the ship and see where it's going, its trajectory, blah, blah. They could have made this tighter and smarter and eliminated the whole second episode entirely and made it all flow better. It's kind of like we had four episodes that accidentally met together, accidentally ran into each other with the same characters, and we called it an arc.
What gives me hope is that we still have 9 episodes left. I mean, we've got the 3 episodes that sort of wrap up everything with Maul and Black Sun and the Mandalorians and everything coming up in the next few weeks. We've got, at some point, the one with Ahsoka on the run that they on the run or escaping with her versus Ventress that we got some preview clips of in that whole 100th episode thing. And at some point, presumably unless they pushed it back into next season, if there is a next season like they're talking about, we've got that arc that deals with Clovis coming back. So, I mean, with at least three more storylines to go in this season, I would think that it's ample opportunities for them to bring this back. From what I understand, the only episode they've shifted in order has been Revival. So if that was the only one, then all these episodes are in a time frame in which they expected that this device was available. Hopefully it will come back.
All right, well, that's what we thought of the episode. Let's find out what you, the listeners, thought.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network, this is Zach, and you know what, I totally agree with what you guys said from last week's episode, as in, you know, it's not really what we wanted, but, you know, it was very entertaining. The thing I go back to is with, like, something like The Phantom Menace, where I really did enjoy the episode one, like, a lot, but, you know, it would have been nice if episode one had ended where Attack of the Clones ended. So, yeah. But I'm not here to review episode one or last week's episode again. I'm here to talk with you about Point of No Return. I thought this was a very entertaining episode. I liked certain parts of it, and there were other parts I didn't. And I'm just glad that we finally got the ending of this droid's arc, and we're moving on to whatever is coming next, because I have no idea what's coming next, because they don't show previews anymore. And it was really cool seeing Tarkin come back. I remember back in season 3 when Jerry, I think it was, said, you know, if this guy doesn't come back, I would think, God, what a waste for him making that cameo. But you know what? He made a cameo in this episode, and that was kind of nice, and hopefully they use him again. That would be awesome. So yeah, season 5's going well for me so far. So far I'm 10 for 12. All right, bye.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that does sound like something I would have said regarding Tarkin. I was glad to see him back and, you know, making that tie, and we talked that earlier. So overall, a great thought.
And next we have a new caller. Let's see what he has to say.
Hi, my name's William Fleck, and I'm calling in on the latest Star Wars episode. I thought the holographic people were so cool because you could go right through them, and I wonder why the droids didn't get medals after they came back. And my dad thought the R2 fight scenes were just too cool. R2 doing it Yoda style, my dad said. Well, thank you for listening. Bye.
You know, that's one thing we didn't really touch on was R2's, like, skills. When he, taking off chasing the buzz droid. We talked a little bit about hitting the center eye and things like that, but the way he was flying around shooting that thing, that was a really fast, intense, yeah, I know, faster, more intense scene that I thought was really well choreographed, for lack of better words, or really well directed in the way they made that so dynamic.
Yeah, he really kicked butt. I mean, the buzz droids and on the super tactical droid, even if it was only initially, you know, keeping him busy, and then able to smack the tactical droid hard enough to break him against the wall. I mean, I think that's the perfect way of putting it. He went Yoda. It's R2-D2's end of Attack of the Clones kind of scene here.
And as far as the droids getting medals when they got back, I think R2 did. I mean, he got a new leg, right?
Yeah. Hey, if Chewbacca doesn't get medals, I doubt droids will.
Chewbacca gets one in the day after the Death Star. Cough, cough, cough. Yeah, it's going to be in Wild Space Volume 1 Omnibus coming up soon. It's from Marvel UK. Cough, cough, cough. Because Leia, you know the reason why he didn't get a medal? Because it would have looked undignified for Leia to have to stand on something to put one around his neck. That's the reason they gave in Marvel UK. I kid you not.
I've heard that. That's not even trying.
See, when I was little, I asked my dad that very question, why didn't Chewbacca get a medal? And he told me that Princess Leia couldn't have dealt with Wookiee breath. And our last caller this week is someone that Jerry might know.
Maybe.
Hey guys, my name is Steve, and I'm a first-time caller, and I'd just like to weigh in on my thoughts. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm a part of the R2-D2 Builders group. I've built my own R2, and because of that, I really liked this arc as a whole. I really liked to see what the droids were doing, the adventure that they were on, and it was very entertaining for me. In my opinion, Gascon and Wack in this Clone Wars arc is the same as R2-D2 and C-3PO. Both R2 and 3PO are the thread that connects the story from movie to movie to movie. And Gascon and Wack, they are the thread and they are the voice that talks to the audience as this story arc goes on. The other thing that I notice is in this arc, R2-D2 is Luke Skywalker. R2 becomes a hero in this. He's the one who destroys the Death Star, or if you will, in this episode, the Republic Cruiser, and R2 is the hero. Finally, I hated to see R2 in pieces, being an R2 builder myself, but when he was repaired, similar to the way he was repaired in A New Hope, I was pretty happy to see that. Overall, I was very happy with the story arc, except for the second episode, and I think you guys are doing a great job. Thanks.
Now, those of you who joined us at the celebration party, we'll remember Steve as he brought the R2 unit to the party, and Jerry knows him because they drove down together to C6. Right, Jerry?
Yes. I spent a lot of time with that little astromech that he built. He actually drove the car a lot of the way so we could, you know, get a little shut eye. But yeah, I was really happy that Steve called in, actually, because, you know, being obviously so into the astromech and the designs, and, you know, Steve's working on a second one, and, you know, hey, I think it'd be pretty fascinating if you went off and made these four exact droids, and maybe at C7 or Celebration Europe 2, maybe somebody will, you know, whip up some of these new designs in the R2 Builders Club. But it's really good to see the astromechs get that spotlight and kind of go on a mission. And they obviously were so heroic in so many ways. I mean, Gascon wasn't the hero. I think Steve really nailed a really good point and really something I never really connected to. And that was how Gascon and Wack were the voice, you know, what told the audience what was going on. We talked in the first episode of this arc about, hey, how cool would it have been if it was just the four astromechs, no talking, kind of like that silent issue of G.I. Joe. And we know George Lucas isn't down with that. I mean, if you remember the whole Force Unleashed background, how they wanted to make the game about Wookiees, and Lucas's response to that was, okay, I just came in here to Lucasfilm to tell y'all, or to, you know, to tell everybody about the power of storytelling, and what you come back to me with was a game about a species that nobody can understand what they're saying. So I don't think Lucas would have ever been down on that. And so thus, we get Wack, we get Gascon. They don't really add a lot to it. Gascon certainly doesn't. Wack pilots the ship, I guess, but they're really the ones who's narrating the adventure. So I think it's a great comparison.
Okay, well, we'd like to thank everybody who called in. And now this, as we said, is the end of this arc, and we're going to be starting new arc, or more appropriately, continuing an arc next week. But before we talk about that, I want to ask you guys, would you be open to the idea of seeing D-Squad returning? I mean, we know that Wack and Gascon are going to be working together throughout the war. Any of you open to storylines with them?
Dude, I want a spinoff series. Are you kidding? No, actually, I'm kidding. I'd be fine with it. I mean, it's one of those things that they, as an element to a good story, I think would be fine. I think they just need to up their game a little bit, though. I mean, the arc in general is fine, but you can't give me any more Sunny Days in the Void. I mean, that's not going to click. I mean, in episodes like that, especially if they come, you know, another time, another, you know, if they, I doubt there's enough episodes left in the show's entire run to really justify bringing them back too often, but they need stronger arcs in general. But the characters are great. Yeah, bring it on.
I would love to see the droids come back. Gascon, not so much, unless kind of tone the ego down a little bit. I just do not care for this character.
Jen might like him back if she sees him on a plate with a side of chips.
I guys. I would like to see them back, I guess, you know, now that we've kind of grown to like them. No more Sunny Days in the Void. But I think the key there is the way that you asked the question, Jonathan, which is an episode with them. An episode with them? Sure. Episodes about them? No.
And I'm going to agree with you guys. I think they are good supporting characters. They could be used as good supporting characters as far as carrying their own arc again. I think that would be a mistake. The response that I've gotten from other fans and even some casual watchers about this arc has really not been overly positive. I think that second episode really, really colored this in a unflattering light. And it's good that they are kind of bringing next week what we all have been waiting this season for. So who here is looking forward to the return of the Knight Brothers and Death Watch next week?
Super excited here. I took the spoiler dip and read some summary stuff from Shadow Conspiracy, the book that adapted this that was already released. And I'm very excited to see not only how it goes, but how people react to it.
I had no idea that was going to be this next episode, so that's kind of exciting. Does that mean we're going to maybe, since it's Death Watch, we might see Black Sun as well?
Black Sun, Death Watch, and the Knight Brothers, they're all one arc.
Cool. Ever since Jonathan and I was at C6, you know, that for that premiere of season 5 and the things that Filoni showed that night and even during the panel, that's totally the things that we've really, really been wanting to see out of season 5 and the things that I flat out would say has made me most excited about season 5 being among the best of the whole run.
You know, it's funny that you bring up that C6 experience, Jerry, because as we talked about, when they showed that preview that's coming from this upcoming arc of the Knight Brothers, Death Watch, and possibly Darth Sidious, that the crowd went insane. And I have to say that I'm right there along with them. I cannot wait. I think this is what really this season is about coming up the next week. But it is actually a continuation of Revival, which was the first episode of this season.
That is right, I believe. I think we should have been watching Revival next. I think it was meant to be 4 in a row. They're adapted that way, at least.
I'd like to thank my colleagues for joining me on this arc, and we will see all of you next week. Have a good night, all.
See ya.
See you next time.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Jerry, Jonathan, Nathan, and Barrett. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.